To go in just a moment. All right. So I am now recording for broadcast and on the record. And if you have no other questions, we'll start here in just a moment.
Okay.
All right. Terrific. Ready to go in 3, 2, 1. Ambassador Ryan Crocker is Dean of the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University. And among other posts, former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan and Iraq. Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for joining me today. You spoke at the Stimson Center back in December, and you said there that the situation in Syria called not for U.S. boots on the ground, but a set of wingtips and pumps on the ground. What did you mean by that remark, and has anything happened in the interim that's caused you to change your mind? Thank you for joining me, Ambassador.
Thank you, Francis. My point was that America needs to look to its foreign service as its first line of defense when the going gets rough. Not to send in the troops, but to send in the diplomats. I think there was a time, now unfortunately past, in Syria, after the closure of our embassy, before the ascendance of Al-Qaeda through the Nusra Front and the Islamic State, when there was a credible secular opposition that we didn't know very much about, but to which I think we could have sent a small group of language-trained area specialists from the Foreign Service under reasonable security conditions, perhaps assisted by the Turks and others, to make contact in Syria with these secular, more or less moderate opposition elements to analyze, to assess, to influence, and to make recommendations back to Washington. We didn't do that. You know, whether or not the situation would be any different now if we had, of course, I can't say. But the broad point I'm trying to make is send in the diplomats first. You know, do not fixate over, oh my goodness, somebody might get hurt. Obviously, we don't want that, but we swear the same oath that our brothers and sisters in uniform swear, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. That doesn't mean just in Paris or Brussels. So I just hope we get out of the Benghazi mindset after the assassination of my friend and colleague Chris Stevens, and recognize that a few good diplomats in really tough situations can shift events, and among other things may save you the necessity to send in the troops later.
Where do you think that the zero risk for diplomats mentality came from? I have heard many of your colleagues in the Foreign Service community say what you just said in different ways. We understand this is a risky business, and we understand that we may come into harm's way. So why do you think that that mentality has spread in other places in Washington, and what can be done to change it, sir?
It has spread, unfortunately, and you know, Chris Stevens would roll over in his grave to see how his assassination has been used and misused. It requires the administration to lay out the case for an expeditionary foreign service, that we are going to use diplomacy and diplomats where it counts the most, and that is in crisis situations. And Congress, which was equally bad in all of this, has to recognize and support that as well. We certainly don't want to lose people. We'll do everything we can to see that we don't. But if we're going to go to zero risk, there's not much point in having a foreign service, quite frankly.
When you use the term expeditionary foreign service, define that term for me, please, Mr. Ambassador. What does that encompass, and what tools would such a foreign service require, maybe tools that they don't have now?
It means going into harm's way, fundamentally. It means going into conflict regions and being able to function out there, which means it requires officers who have had training that we don't currently offer. And a series of assignments like this where they show that they've got the right stuff. Not everybody does, and it's not a failure of character, but for a assignment series, if we'd gone that way, you certainly would want to have people who had been through the crucible before and had been trained for it.
What kind of training would you like the State Department or the government in general to offer? And is the State Department the right place for that kind of training to live?
I think it is, Francis. It means, again, training for contingency assignments before you actually have one. The state's diplomatic security trains its officers, our regional security officers and other security personnel, and trains them very, very well. Diplomatic security is the best close protection unit in the world. So we can do the training. We just have to broaden it and tailor it so that it's not just diplomatic security officers who get it.
Is it your sense that other officers, large groups of other officers, want to receive that training and it's just not available to them? Or would this require, in your view, maybe a culture change or a mindset change among your colleagues in the service?
I think the two go together. There has been a cultural shift. You may remember a few years ago, all around 07, 08, when the Foreign Service did not exactly distinguish itself by volunteering in large numbers for places like Iraq, where I was then serving as ambassador. I think that's changed. Certainly by the time I was in Afghanistan, 2011, 2012, we had no difficulty getting volunteers for what was a pretty rocky assignment, particularly if you were outside of Kabul and the provincial reconstruction teams. So, I think the mindset is there, the mood is there, that younger officers in particular want to go where they can make a difference. And as I said earlier, that's in crisis zones. But it would be great if people who are ready to do that then had some of the training that's going to help them deal with shots fired in anger the first time it happens.
Ambassador Ryan Crocker is Dean of the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University, a very distinguished and long career in the Foreign Service in the United States. You said at this speech at the Stimson Center back in December that the situation in Syria called not for U.S. boots on the ground, but a set of wingtips and pumps on the ground. Is that a strategy or a strategy of how to approach a situation something that we should determine on a case-by-case, country-by-country basis, or is it something that we can establish or have established a standard operating procedure for and we just need to follow it?
Clearly, I think it has to be situation-specific, which is not just country-by-country, but what's the situation in the country? What are the opportunities? What are the risks? What can you reasonably hope to achieve? That said, I think there is an overarching framework for this, which is a mindset that says, if at all possible, we are going to send Foreign Service personnel into a situation. Let's then do the math, risks versus gains, and sort it out from there. So it has to be, I think, very situation specific, but it requires an overarching mindset that says, if we can send them, we will send them.
With Foreign Service officers into an environment first, sir, what does that mean about what must change, if anything, in your view, in the relationship among the Foreign Service, the intelligence community, and the Department of Defense?
It's a great question, Francis. In the field, where I spent most of my career, the coordination and cooperation is very, very close. The Foreign Service and the intelligence community serve together. We have since World War II. we do understand each other. We need to do a better job at making sure Foreign Service officers understand their military counterparts. We've made a lot of progress overseas through joint duty in Iraq and Afghanistan over the years. It would be nice to see that institutionalized back home a little bit better than it is. But again, if you talk to senior military officers, they would like to see more of the Foreign Service, more of the Foreign Service forward, out there doing the kinds of things we have talked about, and not have it always default to the military. Our biggest supporters have been in the military and in DOD. There's a reason for that. They appreciate the skill sets we bring. They would just like to see more of us in more places forward.
Ambassador, are you comfortable or confident that the young people, the next generation of diplomats coming into the Foreign Service, is ready to take up the mantle that you and your peers and colleagues have brought to the point that we're at today?
If anything, Francis, they are more ready than the older generation of Foreign Service officers. Those who have joined since 9/11 know what a dangerous world it is. They want to make a difference where it counts. We never had a difficulty. I was ambassador to Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan after 9/11. We never had a problem getting young officers to sign up. Sometimes it's a little more difficult at senior levels because those officers joined under a different set of assumptions. The young officers today know they're going to be asked to go to dangerous places, know that they will be separated from their families, and are ready to do it. So I feel very good about the future of the service. I feel very good about the present of the service. What we have to do is have a mindset in both the executive and the legislative branches that says we're going to use our diplomatic assets where we need the most, and we're going to accept the attendant risk.
Is that a matter of simply decision-making, where the administration or any administration will simply decide how we're going to do things from now on, or are there deeper policy changes that you believe are required, sir?
I don't think it requires that dramatic of a re-engineering of the way we do business overseas. It simply requires a mindset that says we are going to put our diplomatic assets forward in crisis situations, precisely so that we may avoid the need to send the troops later. And again, I'm not advocating anything irresponsible. You've got to then balance. You've got to assess the situation, balance risks versus potential gains, and make prudent decisions. But you've got to have a change in mindset. I think that's what's necessary rather than a fundamental re-engineering of our policy approach. There's nothing wrong, I think, by and large, with the way we approach policy issues. This is a tactical issue. But tactics are pretty important when you're pursuing strategic goals.
Mr. Ambassador, those are all the questions I have for you. I'm very grateful for your time, and I thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you, Francis.
Ambassador, I'm just going to double check.